We are in Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23, it's actually the lesson number 26. Proverbs 23, lesson number 6. I am really enjoying this part of Proverbs because the Proverbs have become longer. Back in chapter 22, verse 20, Solomon is telling his son Rehoboam that he is going to write him more Proverbs. He's actually asked Solomon if the Proverbs that he has already sent to him and written to him have not changed his life and made a great impact on his life. And now he is saying to him that he is going to write a few more Proverbs to him and give in order to direct him even further. Well, these Proverbs actually started a few of them in last week's lesson, and almost all of them in this week's lesson are multiple sentences long. And so they give a greater idea of an illustration of what Solomon is trying to say. And so we start with 23, verse 1. It says, "When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat." "If you are a man of great appetite, do not desire his delicacies, for it is deceptive food." This is interesting because what Solomon is saying to Rehoboam and anyone else who hears, which means you because we're studying this, he wants to instruct Rehoboam and us in the etiquette of how to eat when we sit before kings and before rulers. And so Solomon specifically addresses the person who is extremely hungry, the person who may be a glutton, the person who sometimes has a hard time showing restraint when he is in front of food. A sin that I must admit, I mean, it's the ruler. He's got money, right? It's the ruler. He can afford it. Look at all this wonderful, wonderful food that's in front of me, and he's offered it, and I'm hungry, so might as well fill up now, because as poor as I am, I won't be able to fill up later. So you just take advantage of the king's food that he has laid out for you. Solomon is giving a warning not to do that. That when you go and you sit before the kings and you sit before the rulers and the princesses, that you restrain yourself, that you show humility. So, and don't try to fill your stomach when you're sitting there at the king's table. Now, this is an interesting thing. The way a person presents himself before kings and rulers will also determine how the kings and rulers view that person. Because you have to remember, when you're called to sit before the king or a ruler, you are there for a purpose. You may not know the purpose at all. Have you ever been invited to go eat with the boss and you didn't know what it was about? Have you ever been invited by some minister or some pastor to eat with them and you do not know why you're being picked out to go eat with them? No? Okay, check off. Put her on the list. We'll take her out to eat, all right? She has absolutely no idea why she's going out. Sometimes rulers are looking for things. And here's the problem. Because not all rulers are righteous. Sometimes when you're sitting before the ruler or whatever, they are searching out for things that may entrap you. The delicacies, in other words, of what the king may be offering may in fact be deadly to you because you're exposing to that king or that ruler or that boss or that person who has some sort of authority over you how you really think about things. I know personally from early in my life, in fact, the first time it ever happened, when a pastor called me in and asked my opinion on something, and he did not say anything to me about his opinion. He just asked me my opinion. Within just a day or so, I realized that my opinion was in direct contradiction to his opinion. And our relationship was virtually over at that point in time. And his intent was to see that I move on someplace else. These things happen. They do happen. So because not all rulers are righteous, we must be careful in what we say. We must be careful in how we act. Now, when he says, do not put a knife to your throat, or be careful to put the knife to your throat, he's not talking about committing suicide. He's talking about how you present yourself in front of the person who's in charge and actually has some sort of rule over you. You may, by your actions, be putting a knife to your throat. And Solomon says, be careful. Now listen, Solomon of all men and all kings should know about this. Because remember, Solomon, in his position as the king of Israel, and actually the most powerful king of Israel that ever lived, had many queens and many kings to come sit before him, and had the opportunity to know everyone in the region. And he knew the difference between those who were good and those who were wicked. And he knew in his wisdom about those who he set before that he might say something or might react in some way that would in the end cause some sort of trouble for him. So Solomon is warning us about that. So that means when you go to a luncheon, be careful. When you've been invited, be careful how you present yourself. Verse number four. See, we get to speed along a lot quicker because the stories and the illustrations are longer. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies towards the heaven. You know, I often have thought about this verse. Why do I even need to give some commentary on this verse? Because everybody in this room knows what this says and understands it. Everybody here has sought at some point in time to become wealthier. And the harder they tried to get it, it seems like it just sprouted wings and flew away. I never will forget as a kid getting a little money in my pocket and deciding to invest it in the stock market. And I was going to play options. And I had no idea. No, let me back up. I thought I knew what I was doing. Can I put it that way? And I decided to invest in puts and calls. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Some of you don't. Well, all I did by investing in puts and calls was just, you know, throw my money into the market and somebody else took it. That's all that happened. That's really all. Because I did it too fast. I was so convinced that God was on my side and he was going to make me a wealthy man at 18. Well, that was just before he put me in the woods in my car for 5 months. And said, son, you know, I will provide for your needs. And right now, all you need is a car in the woods. And this is where you're going to sleep. And this is where you're going to be. God was preparing me for that, by the way. When someone comes into my office and they say they have to have a hotel for the night because they've been sleeping in their car. And I say, what's wrong with your car? Well, you don't understand. I said, oh, yes, I understand. I know what it's like. Sure do. And you're a short person. I'm a tall person. When a car is only 4.5 to 5 feet wide and you're 6 foot, it's hard to crawl up in a car. But listen, you're only 5'1". You ought to fit just fine. Do you need a pillow and another blanket? Chasing after things. Well, you have to understand, money, according to Paul, is a root of all sorts of evil. I put that in quotes because that is there in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. I use this every single time that I'm dealing with someone with finances. And I must tell you, I have never had a couple set before me that was wanting to have a divorce or get a divorce that the first issue when you finally got back to it was how one of them or both of them used money. And then it quickly got very personal, and the personal part of it, well, what'd you do with the money? Well, what'd you do with the money? Well, I make that money. It's my money. Well, I take care of the kids and stay at home. Well, you don't do any. It just got real personal. You know what I'm saying? And they forgot that it was all started by a money issue. Money is truly a root of all sorts of evil. The scripture is correct. And what the Lord is saying here through Solomon is that the Lord will provide for what a person needs. He really and truly will. This is the reason why I struggle every single week as I hear story after story after story, and people who are coming in with what they call needs, I'm going, well, you don't really need that because that's a want. That's not something you really need. How can I help you with something that you really need? And therefore, a lot of people do not like me, and that's okay, because what they think they need, the big one, as you all might could tell, is the telephone with internet on it. The telephone with internet. You talking about a root of all sort of evil is the desire for money so that you can keep your phone on so you can surf and be connected with people that you don't even know who they are so that you can post something on your Facebook or whatever, social media, so someone can say something nice to you because you rely on that response from someone outside and around to say, oh, aren't you sweet? Or that's so sweet. Or you need to post something else like that. Or thanks for that. You know, I got news for you. You got to understand, in my business, benevolence business, I'm going to find out while we're talking to you whether you have a Facebook or a social media or Twitter or whatever. And my secretaries are now running those traps as before we make a decision on whether we're going to help you or not. And if you're spending 90% of your time on social media instead of working at a job, there is a good chance that probably the answer is going to be a 2-alphabet letter answer instead of a 3. Do you know what the difference of that is? 3 is the words Y-E-S. And the 2 is what you're probably going to get is N-O. And I have no problem doing that and saying that. And I have no problem saying, look, you're posting every 10 seconds. This is your job. You don't have a job because this is your job. Go get a job. Well, here's the deal. People desire to have money, and yet they do not do what they need to do just to provide for the needs. Oh, but they're always on this big get-rich kick. There's always something. Buy this type of dollars from this country, and it's going to turn you into a millionaire. And so they go borrow money from the bank to buy some currency. That was going around a while back to where, you know, everybody was buying the Iraqi dinari or whatever it was in hope that it was going to change. And it may change. It may. The problem is I don't understand why the poorest of the poor people are the ones who fall for that. The ones who struggle every day just to make ends meet are the ones who fall for these type of things. Now, if you've got enough money to throw towards that and it's okay and it hasn't hurt you, that's a whole different ball game. Some of us, we do invest in little things that go south from time to time. In fact, if you invest in something every time that makes money, something is really strange, because for every time you get up to bat in the financial market, you're probably going to strike out more than you make it. And for those who make it in the financial market who are traders, they make it because they keep going to bat, and when they do win, they win bigger than their losses. However, the problem is their loss pile is a whole lot taller in paperwork than it is in the win pile. And I remember that from my early days of chasing after wealth. I finally decided that, listen, Solomon was correct. Do not put all your eggs in one basket, as Solomon says. He says, put your investments in 7, yea, even 8 different investments, for you do not know what tomorrow brings. And he is correct. And so with that strategy, financial moving along one little bit at a time has been easier. And for some of us, like me, the way you save, the way you become a person who is stable is saving one dime on top of another dime on top of another dime and never spending the dimes, because most of us do not have the ability to make a great sum of money in one chunk over and over and over again. Most of us, we get a paycheck and we just have to save a little. And yet these, this, and I'm saying this to you for a reason, because you almost all of y'all are getting to the age where you are going to be profiled and receive a phone call because they think that you have expendable income to send their way, and they will provide you absolutely nothing. The big one that happened again this week was, Grandma, yes, I'm in jail in Mexico. You've got to go to HEB and wire me some money. Folks, do not be bothered by that, because the chances are your granddaughter is not in Mexico. It probably not. So before you help with anything, you call their parents to find out where they are, or call them to find out where they are. Don't seek wealth in such a way, and don't use your wealth that you have gained frivolously. Because when somebody calls you and says to you, we have indication that your computer needs repairs. We are coming by your street. If you will set them out on the front porch, we will fix them and return them to you. Now, you have to understand that your computer that you sit on the front street is probably hooked up to bank accounts and everything else in the world. And so my next door neighbor, who they were very smart before they got old, would never have done that, but they did it, and their identities were stolen. So watch out for those people who are seeking after wealth in such a way as that. And look on, verse 6. Do not eat bread with a selfish man, I love this, or desire his delicacies. For as he thinks within himself, so he is. He says to you, eat and drink, but his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the morsel you have eaten and waste your compliments. Here the warning is against eating with a stingy man. The stingy man who has invited you to eat will judge every bite you take because you're spending his money. You wouldn't invite somebody out to eat. You know that the proper etiquette that you were raised with when you was a child was find out what the host is buying for their food and match it or be less in what the value is. Isn't that what you were trained when you were a kid? Oh, but no, you do not do that. They buy a Cobb salad. You buy a prime rib. And to add to it, whenever the waitress comes by or waiter and asks if you want dessert, you buy a $6 slice of cake, which if you'd have bought it from the store and made it, would have cost you less than $6 for the entire cake. But you do that. And oh, by the way, you also order coffee with the cake and a glass of iced tea with the meal. And the stingy person is looking at you, adding it all up in his head. I bet you never get invited out by the stingy person again. Well, the stingy person will eventually make the guest so miserable that the guest will wish that he has never accepted the invitation. I know. I have been there before. By the way, if someone ever invites you out to eat and they're paying, that means they have something they want to say to you. If somebody invites you out and you pay, that means you have something you want to say to them. Did you know that? Just want to make sure everybody's clear. In other words, it's probably best if everybody goes Dutch so both of you can leave the table without being mad at each other in one way or another. Do what? And what am I trying to say? Sorry, you want Chinese food? I'm buying this time, all right? Verse 9, do not speak in the hearing of a fool. Catch that? Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. So in the process of us growing older each day, and now that I have reached that glorious, wonderful, marvelous age of 60, which I've been wanting to be for years and years and decades, I really can understand this. As we grow older, we have a list of people who we realize are foolish. When I was young in high school, I didn't realize foolish people were foolish. I really didn't. I remember whenever I went to the store and this friend of mine, who I thought was a friend of mine, he talked me in. We were going to go camping out, and I wanted some Red Hots to put in the peach cobbler that we were going to make. You know, he put some Red Hot, the little heart things you put into them. Yeah, just need a few. So he says to me, you know, you ought to buy some 7-Up to go along with those Red Hots. Now listen, I want to tell you something. So I bought 7-Up and I bought Red Hots. Have any of y'all ever had Red Hots and 7-Up? Okay, well, just let me share this with you. They don't go good together. But he told me how good they were. And he laughed at me because it was the only thing I had to drink was 7-Up to go with my Red Hots that I was going to eat. And listen, anything like that, that citrus doesn't go with Red Hots, okay? Just try it. Now, not because I'm forcing you to. Go try it, and you'll realize how bad it was. But he knew. He had already experienced it. And so, I never trusted him again for the rest of my high school career because when he said something, I knew that he was trying to pull the wool over my eyes. Have you ever had any wool pulled over your eyes by anybody? Well, that's what has happened. Well, listen, you got to understand. When you're speaking with someone who may be tricking you, maybe a fool also, they all have opinions. And in most cases, their opinions about things are really, really incorrect. In fact, in our encounters with them, with these foolish people, we will learn that they are probably not going to take our advice. I have people that regularly come to me for advice who never take my advice, never. But they come back the next time that their ox is in the ditch. Do you know what ox is in the ditch means? Okay, they're stuck. Their car may be in the ditch. That may be better because most of us don't use oxen anymore. But their ox is in the ditch. Their car is in the ditch. They need help getting out, and they want some suggestion. And at this point, they come and apologize for not taking the wise counsel the previous time, so they won't counsel this time. So I waste an hour and a half giving them wise counsel and why and all the ins and outs and how to do it, and they don't do it. And they just get in more trouble, and their ox doesn't get out of the ditch. And so there comes a point in time, even with me, that when a person comes to my office after I have counseled with them over and over, that I will say to you, 5 times you have been in here. 5 times you have sought my counsel. 5 times I have spent hours and hours dealing with you on what you should do. Do you expect me to give you counsel the 6th time for a 6th hour without you showing some sort of good faith that you are going to take my advice? Well, how rude you are. How rude I am. I'm trying to give you good counsel. I do not need to share with you things that you are going to just fluff off. I do not need to give you counsel any longer because you've never taken my counsel and you've always come in and apologized for it when you needed more counsel that you were not going to take. Well, I'm going to write a letter to the pastor. Okay, do you want to do it in an email right now? I will fill you out and set you at my desk, and you can type him a letter of why you have never taken my counsel before and you're seeking counsel now. I'll just do it from home. Okay, let me give you his email address. And I'm sweet and kind to them in different thank you. Thank you, Charlie. But I do not give them counsel. I do not give them counsel any longer. There is a point in time, according to what Solomon says, when you should not give counsel any longer to those who are foolish. And here's the sad part about it. They've got their opinions. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they are going to dig a hole for themselves, and they're going to continue to dig a hole for themselves deeper and deeper and deeper. Some people are just that way. And by the way, every one of you has some relative that has done this. Every one of us in this room, we all have the testimony of some relative, a child, a niece, a sister, an aunt, an uncle, a father, a mother, who constantly dug the hole deeper because they never took advice. Oh, but they were very vocal in their opinion about the subject as if they were an expert. But it never panned out for them. Boy, I'm using a lot of those strange little words there. Panned and ox in the ditch and things like that. Here we go. Verse number 10. Is that what happens when I turn 60? Shows my age. Tom, what are you doing on this side? Okay, the problem is I thought I was not going to be able to teach this morning because I'm used to seeing you over here instead of over here. Do you realize I have mentioned you in the last 5 videos? Really? Really, I have. I need to come by your office for more counsel. That's right, you do. That's right. Actually, if you'd show back up, I would talk to you about the lesson, because the last time I talked to you about the lesson, you gave me some really good advice. It took you half a day to come back with it, but it was good when you did. All right, good. All right. All right. Praying for what? Oh, good counsel. Okay, good. That verse does not apply to you, Tom. Okay? Because your wife keeps you in line. Oh, I'm not going there. Listen, the contention thing. You mean the vexing? Are you talking about that verse that Solomon has said twice about it's better to live on the top of a roof than in that corner of a house? Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not going there. All right. Now, everybody wants to know what's going on. Let me tell you something. I'm going to, listen, because I think she did wonderful. I did something that Miss Janet thought was wrong. And she came right to me, and she told me about it. From one end of my foot to the top of my head and back down to my feet, okay? Just chewed me out. Okay. In love, you did. And I love her for that. And I've said that many times. I am an open book. You can come and talk to me, and everybody can. And so Tom shows up and says, was she vexing? And it was right after the lesson. And so that's where, okay. Do you want me to cut this part out of the tape? Okay, I will. All right. All right. Verse 10, do not move the ancient boundary or go into the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is strong and he will plead their case against you. This is pretty simple. What the purpose of this proverb is to highlight the sin of stealing from an orphan. Now you have to remember in this day, whenever a husband died, the children were considered orphans even though they had a mother, because the mother was not able to provide in many cases for the child. So because of that, we can tag on that orphans are almost always attached to widows. And so it is one thing to cheat a little bit and move the boundary. It's a sin to move the boundary line of that which belongs to the tribe of Benjamin over into that which belongs to the tribe of Ephraim, and you're getting some of the land every year as you're plowing and you're moving that boundary line. But it is a greater sin in Solomon's eyes here for you to take things from the fatherless and from the husbandless. That is a tragedy. In fact, we have it over and over and over again, how we are instructed to take care of the orphans and to take care of those who are widows, to make sure they have provisions as they need. So, what you have to realize is, for those people who take advantage of the orphans and those people who take care of the widows, the Lord is the great redeemer, and he will avenge the widows and the orphans. He will fight for them, and he will provide for them, for those who are innocent and for those who are helpless in these type of causes.